Hey everybody, welcome to the Mini PC Show, episode number 33, Door. This is episode 33. It's kind of special in a weird way for podcast listeners, or at least the ones I talk to. I'm Eric Hardini, the manager, and I also have the other Mini PC Show guy this week, Door-to-Door Geek, and Brian is rearranging an office. We don't have him tonight. Door-to-Door Geek, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Brian definitely seemed a little discombobulated, like today snuck up on him this week, and he was still rearranging his office in his new house. And trust me when I say I understand, because that is a very painful thing to do, because you don't want to do it until you have to do it, and then once you do it, you never want to do it again.
Mm-hmm. This studio is set up in a way where I've got an unboxed carpet cleaner, steamer, I don't know what you call it, shampooer?
Yeah.
It's still in the box, holding up like this rack of stuff over here to my right, and I need that. I need that cleaner out of there, and I need to get rid of that box, because my main carpet cleaner I gave to the apartment building I own, and I need to use this one for my house, but that just means I would have to rearrange everything, and I don't want to get into that.
Yeah, carpet cleaning means you got to basically move all your furniture, right?
Yeah, well, I'm not going to do the carpet cleaning that I know of. I would just have to rearrange this office to get to the box with the brand new cleaner sitting in it.
Gotcha.
See, we ordered it, ordered on Amazon or Wood or something, and the one that arrived was defective, so they sent us a new one and told us to keep the old one. Well, I fixed the old one by like wedging a quarter in a spot by a switch, and it works fine as long as you have a quarter wedged in there. So we've been rocking that one until now, but now we need this one. Hey, could Mini PC be a big PC with a mini cost? I was in the library the other day. They had an HP AMD 64 with 6 gigs of RAM and a terabyte hard drive with a monitor, keyboard, and mouse for $50.
Say that again? An HP
desktop with a monitor,
okay,
keyboard, and mouse. 6 gigs of RAM, 1 terabyte hard drive, AMD 64. I'm not sure the specs on the chip on that, for $50.
I would have been tempted to pick it up.
I know I was tempted, but then I look in here and I've got 1, 2, 3, 4... I've got 5 desktops already in here. I don't even know what I would do with it.
I know, but 6 gigs of RAM? You have a box with 6 gigs of RAM?
I don't even know if I have 6 gigs of RAM in most of these computers here.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, to me, RAM is one of those valuable resources. When you can get a lot of RAM in a computer, it will set that computer apart from the rest of your devices, in my opinion.
Right.
Because, like, right now, this computer I'm on with my webcam, it only has, I think, 4 gigs of RAM. 4 gigs of RAM, because the other desktop I have that I basically gave to my son has 16 gigs of RAM. Let me just say that one I never have any problems with. Well, you know,
I might just go back there tomorrow and see if it's still there. And then I'm like, well, maybe, you know, if it's sitting at the library for sale, maybe it has no hard drive, or maybe I should leave it for some unfortunate person who needs a $50 computer. But I've given it 4 days, so if it's still there, you know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah,
I might just have to grab that, even though I don't really have the cash for it right now. But it's just like too good. And the bad thing, if the monitor would have had an HDMI port, right, I wouldn't even have thought twice, but it doesn't. It's just got a VGA and HDMI, or a VGA and
DVI.
DVI, yeah.
Yeah.
And I've got a lot of those monitors. I've got 6 monitors here with VGA and DVI with no HDMI.
Right.
Just rocking at the present time.
Yeah, I got lucky with my monitor purchase. My timing was good, where my main two monitors have one HDMI, one DVI, one VGA port on each of them.
Yeah, and you can always put a splitter on the HDMI if you want to run more than one thing off of it. Yeah. I've never used one, but I assume that they work just as good as any splitter, I would think.
I don't see why not.
Yeah. I haven't, as far as mini PCs, I haven't purchased anything, and I haven't really been doing a whole lot of experimenting, though I did think of a project yesterday. You've got experience with those digital safes, you know, where it's, mm-hmm, instead of a key or you turn the knob, you have a touchpad. Well, something happened with the board and the touchpad of my safe, so I broke into it and I've got it wired up to where if I just hook a 9-volt battery up to it, I can get it to open. So I'm thinking maybe I could use a Pi Zero or Raspberry Pi or something, and either one, hook up a keyboard to it again, and make a password, or even maybe do like some kind of an NFC chip thing where you got to hold your phone up to it, mm-hmm. and then it would unlock.
Yeah, I mean, there's three types I can think of mechanisms you can do, easy type mechanisms you can do. The NFC tag, to me, is an obvious, that's like a gimme easy one. The number pad, you can buy basically, instead of full QWERTY keyboards, number pad, just the number pad only, and you can get them actually pretty thin. But the third one is actually a vibration sensor. There is something called a vibration sensor where you could literally program in like a code, knock, 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 and have it open up kind of thing. That one, I want to say I did see a project on before. That one I thought was interesting at least. But to me, I like the idea of the NFC because then you can basically clone the tag, keep it off in a safe place, and then you have your daily usage NFC tag to open it up.
Yeah. Well, but that tag would have to be powered, right? Or would the power be on the safe side coming off the 9-volt?
The safe side, I think, okay. I thought.
Okay. That might work because I'm the only one with a smartphone. My wife would need to get into there. So as long as she has the tag, like if I had two identical tags that would work together, powered up, yeah, that might work.
Right.
Or I've got the LCD screen, and I could probably, you know, make a number screen show up on that or something, possibly too. I don't know. Anyway, that's a project I'm thinking about. Other hardware I got, the Google Home came in, but for some reason, having it down here in the lab, it's really not performing that well. In the kitchen, it's been flawless.
Right.
I bring it down here to give a demo, and it goes haywire.
Well, this is something, to be honest, I forgot to mention now 2 years on Android App Addicts, and that is the seamless, and this is how you know all the tech journalists actually have zero real-world daily usage experiences with Android, because they live in their pristine world and their pristine environment with their pristine Wi-Fi, and they don't leave because they're too busy writing articles, because that's the only way they make money. Google Now or Google Home is going to be extremely sensitive to Wi-Fi. When I drive home from Columbus, Ohio, there's a 2-hour place where I get no signal whatsoever. And there's one spot where when I'm on the highway, I get a signal, but as soon as I pull off, I can literally spot the part of the exit ramp where I lose my signal. And then it gets really flaky for like a quarter mile, and then it just disappears. But in that flaky area, I can sit there, and I did 20 times back-to-back on my phone, tap the mic, and do the easiest, simplest command I could think of, which was navigate home. And yeah. 20 times in a row, it could not do it. So response time on your network is going to be a very key thing about this device, I can tell you right now. If there's any interruptions, any lag, any disturbance, any hiccup, you're going to see anomalies happen where it just isn't working right. There is no way to really fix that except to introduce artificial lag. Now, you should know this, Eric. Steve C., back when he would have people on podcasts, he always had a couple rules for you to be on the show. And one of them was you could not be connected wirelessly. You had to be connected hardwired. That's because wireless is herky-jerky, dare I say, stuttery internet, where you have lapses of connection where it just goes out and then it comes back, and then it goes out and then it comes back. When you stream video and stuff, it buffers so much that you don't notice it. But in reality, wireless is extremely non-concurrent from what I can tell. So for you to have a really good, consistent experience on a Google Home, you better have that thing on the perfect place in your house with a golden signal attached to it and never move it kind of thing.
Yeah, and I don't understand how that would be, because in its normal environment is in the kitchen. This room I'm in right now is a concrete room with the router and it in the same room.
Well, you can be too close to an access point, I can tell you right now.
I'm thinking that must be what's going on here.
Yeah, because when I have my phone literally in my left hand, not even outstretched, and my router is at my right arm outstretched, I can't connect to my router.
Okay.
I have to move in a couple inches or a foot, or move out a couple inches or a foot, and then I can connect. Radio waves. Shoulders up and hands and palms facing up. It's like, what are you going to do? We really don't understand how all this connectivity stuff truly works. You know, kind of like gravity, Eric. We really don't know how gravity truly is a thing, but we know it's a thing. You know, we can see things fall. We can measure the speed. We can measure this with the radio waves coming out of these things. We can measure them. We know, oh, it's there's a connection. Oh, but we really don't understand how they actually do what they do. It's a weird thing. So I'll say this. You better keep that thing in a really good spot, and they're going to have to introduce lag on the device. There's no doubt about it. They're either going to have to near consistently ping and see what kind of connection they have so they know what kind of lag to introduce when you say those magic words, or as soon as you say those magic words, they got to send out a ping, measure it, and then give a very calculated response, i.e., is it going to very quickly say, there's a glitch, I can't do that right now, or is it going to wait a second? Because, and here's the other failing, as far as I'm concerned, Eric. Why doesn't it give you a ping when you say the magic words?
It doesn't want to be like your phone. And it doesn't want to, there is lights that light up on top, so you know it hears you only if you look at it.
To me, that's stupid. Because you're not always going to be looking at it, nor is it always going to be with an eye shot even.
Right. But it does pick up most of the, I'm going to give my experience of it not in this room, and it does pick up most of the time, and I'm not really, I trained myself because it was a little confusing having a Nexus 5X and that in the room at first until I realized Hey Google was the call sign for it. And I just said that, so it's going to talk to me in a second here, I think. And I think I'd like to listen to the Podnuts podcast.
If it gave you a ding or a ping, you would have known. This is why it really is stupid. Did it do something?
Huh?
What was that? I heard noises.
Oh, that was me turning the volume up in case it,
gotcha. It didn't hear me. To me, this is how... Now, look. I'm happy you got the device, and I'm happy with any thing you can get out of it that's positive. And I'm really happy if you do enjoy it and like it. But I would really like you to at least be honest and admit that you're now a Google Home beta tester. This is Rev 1. I mean, and it's going to get better. I know it's going to get better. But right now, just a beta tester.
There's a lot of things that I had expected it to do that it does not do at this time. And it lets you know, we're working on it. I'm learning things every day, it says, stuff like that. Things that out of the door you would think that it would do. Now, I was surprised that it plays podcasts right off the bat.
Well, some.
That was a good thing, and it played Android App Addicts when I asked for it. It played Mini PC Show when I asked for it, No Agenda. I didn't have to, you know, install any apps for it to find that stuff. It knows it. And maybe that's because, you know, Google Play Music has a podcast section now. So that was a really impressive part.
Yeah, and to be really uppity and real pompous, like the hardcore gamers are to the casual gamers, the Google Play Music ecosystem for podcast is maybe the worst experience I've ever had listening to a podcast for one main reason, and that is no variable speed playback. Listening to any podcast, including and especially my own podcast, because I do dog food, I do listen to everything Podcast does, it literally sounds like everybody is on Valium or drugs or morphine or something.
That's because you're used to 1.8 or whatever.
No, 2.6 now.
Oh my gosh, door.
Yeah, 2.6 or 2.8.
I have bumped up to 1.5, 1.6 on a few of them because I had to. And I do really enjoy that. Right. I do. Well, especially some of them are just so slow. And they were slow. And they were, but other ones that I didn't realize were slow are slow. And sometimes I don't even realize I've got them sped up till the buffer music comes on. And I'm like, "Oh wow, this is really fast music."
Yeah. And I'm going to be honest with you, Eric. I'm not honest to a lot of people about this, but.
I'm glad it's just you and me here, though.
I know.
We're tight, man. You can say anything.
So I'm now up to a certain podcast. I'm up to 2.8. Certain podcast is 2.5 or 2.6, I think it is. Other people like Jonathan, they do literally listen to like 8X because, you know, that's what he does.
Well, okay, he might have extra sensory perception in the earlobes.
Well, I'll just say, very ignorantly, he has less distractions because he's blind. which of course is the lie, but whatever. But in a very serious way, Eric, I believe to at least a degree, maybe even a measurable degree, a questionably measurable degree, listening to audio that fast has to a degree damaged my ability to be comfortable with doing mundane tasks without listening to anything. Because when I'm not listening to podcasts, it does seem like everything goes really slow and takes forever.
So do you, is it that everything does go really slow, or everybody you come in contact with talks too slow?
Everything, both, all.
Everything, just yeah. The perception of time is expanded by at least one,
and
0.5.
And to be honest, dare I say, it's almost to me like a mentally, almost a drug, listening to the sped up podcast, because I have the ability to, dare I say, like Johnny Mnemonic, listen to content at a faster rate of speed and able to take in more information a little bit quicker. Right. And honestly, I like it.
If you're comprehending what you're listening to at that speed, you are gaining knowledge faster than everybody else.
Right.
Who would listen at the same speed listen to the same podcast you do at regular speed.
And it's good, but like helping my 8-year-old with his math homework, even though it only takes like 7 minutes, 10 minutes, it feels like it's a 4-hour task that involves some sort of physical torture. It's just hard to do because, I mean, I don't know how many times I can explain to the kid. 2 times 7 is 14. I mean, I explain to him 20 different ways, but it's never enough. But I digress. I'll say this. The stupidest thing about the Google Home is the fact that you can change the color of the bottom parts. This ain't a friggin' vase.
Yeah, it kind of looks like a vase.
This isn't a centerpiece for your holiday meal, for your holiday table. This is not decor, and trying to make it decor is a straight up civilization damaging thing that is very reminiscent of something that Apple would do. Trying to make their stupid microphone and speaker device into something more than a speaker and microphone device.
Is it better to offer this, the thing that you don't have to pay extra for if you don't want to, or to have a monolithic black cone that you can't change if you even want to? Like, I think it's okay to give people choice if they want to make it, you know, customize it.
Yeah,
like people have been customizing
it. You want to customize
it? All cars don't come in black anymore. You can get cases for your phones now.
You want to customize it? Get a can of spray paint. Do it yourself. Don't be lazy and buy some stupid cloth-based thing that gives the illusion of customization when it's not.
Yeah, that's such a nice magnet. Oh, hey, one thing on it. I haven't really listened to a whole lot of reviews, but I haven't heard anybody else talk about this either. Mm. When I do pop off this part that you hate so much, it's really easy. It's magnet, snaps in. There is a micro USB port on the inside of that, which is not accessible from the outside.
Right.
I would imagine that one must be for a firmware upgrade or hacking it later, giving it root, possibly.
So is there any way to plug anything up from the outside?
No, just power on the bottom. That's it.
So how does it get its power? Is it a battery?
Power cord on the bottom.
Okay. Oh, so that must be, if that isn't a way to do updates, I don't know what is.
It's got to be update or reset, you know, say if it really messes up.
Yeah, like a firmware reset.
Yeah, there's got to, or a hard, you know, like a whole operating system upgrade.
Right.
Even though I think all that should be able to be handled over Wi-Fi, it's got to be for troubleshooting and major issues.
Right, or for the NSA, of course.
Yeah, I guess they could just suck in all of your conversations for the last however many years it stores it for on there. I don't know how much gigs is in there, but it's always listening. There is a button on the back that will turn the microphone on and off.
Oh, that
microphone off.
At least it says it's off.
But it's not like it's a hard switch or nothing. You're pressing it and it's telling you it's off. You press it, it tells you it's on. So it's, maybe it is.
I don't know. I still almost firmly believe, Eric, and this is going to be insulting to a lot of people out there, this is an uncommonly niche device. The only people I think to get real utilitarian usage out of these kind of devices, to be honest, are handicap or people with accessibility needs. I think will get the most usefulness out of these devices. And except for that, I mean, its main function, I think, is to settle arguments or ask, who was that actor from that movie with that chick in it? I don't know.
So one use case, I mean, and that's you talking from a guy who has an Android phone. I'm the only one in our house with an Android phone. It gets used a lot more by people who don't have Google Now at their disposal at all times.
To and do what?
So to do a calculation on measuring something, to set a timer, to it's in our kitchen. But then also to basically say, we were talking about maybe putting some grapevines in next year. And basically, we just shout into the air, "Hey, can you show me a video about growing grapes in Illinois?" And then, bing bong bang, it's up on your television. Started with no phone, tablet, or anything needed. And because the people in my house don't have a phone or a tablet in their hand to do this kind of stuff. They watch me do it, but now they've got just as much access as I do. And I did do make a new user account only for this, like the Ardini Home or whatever, you know, user account, so that I can. It does come with 6 months of YouTube Red and Google Play Music unlimited, so that'll be good for a while. Right. I don't know how much functionality we'll lose when that goes away.
Honestly, you don't nothing, because even when you do play audio or YouTube videos, the only difference is then you'll see ads.
I mean, my collection is unlimited of music on it. I can ask it to play anything I really want to hear. And will that be the same even without unlimited, or is it just my stuff and I'll hear a preview of the songs?
Anything that you do not, anything you play outside of your library is susceptible to an ad being played. It's not every time, but it can be, kind of thing.
Okay.
And I'll say this, the thing that really makes me upset about the device is you can't do meetings or reminders. Now, me being me, it's going to do meetings and reminders, even if it tells me it can't. And that is, okay, today is Wednesday. I need to remember this on Friday at 4 p.m. Okay, it's 10 p.m. Okay, set timer for 65 hours and 42 minutes. I mean, seriously, that's what I would do, because I'll tell you now, that thing is going to do reminders and meetings whether it wants to or not, because for it not to is utterly incompetent. That's like offering a car that you can't turn left in.
Right. Yeah, you're right. And I haven't tried, but I've seen other people on videos try to do it. I can try real quick.
That ain't gonna work. Now here's the thing. I'm hoping I'm really stupid and I'm ignorant and I'm wrong, and it turns out there's a feature that they're going to turn on in 30, 60, 90 days, whatever, that makes, that's why it couldn't do meetings, because to do this meant that, and then this would conflict with meetings. So yes, it makes sense. But until then, even though Google has all those PhDs, I feel like the smart one in this equation.
Yeah, no, it should do that out of the box. I agree.
Right.
It does a couple other things that I wasn't expecting. Like it can host a trivia game between the people in the room. It'll do Mad Libs, where it'll ask you for a noun and a pronoun and an adjective, like 20 words, and then it reads you the story with your silly words put into it.
I don't know if I'm ever bored to the point where I would do either of those two things, Eric. I would sooner play hacky sack with the device.
Use the device as the hacky sack?
Yeah. Then play some kind of, tell me a noun. Tell me an adverb. What? What the hell is this? I'm not in third grade. I'm an adult.
I'm the kind of guy who, on my Amazon Fire Stick,
you know,
bought the app You Don't Know Jack.
Well, I know. What would be better, I'm just going to tell you now, what would be better and a lot more entertaining is like there's one podcast I listen to, they have a section called What's That Noisy, where every, I think it's every episode, they play a sound, mm-hmm. and then you have to email in what is that sound, and next week they tell you what that sound is.
I'll from a video have, game?
Well, no, from anything.
Oh, from anything.
Okay. From all kinds of stuff, and then you have to guess it. And I would rather do that than tell me a verb, tell me a pronoun.
It does do about every animal sound you could imagine. You can ask it what's a blank sound like, and it'll do it.
Well, I know, but there's a problem, Eric, because it's lying to you. Because, period. Like, if you say, what does a goat sound like? Well, you know, goats can actually sound like six different animals. Okay, what does a fox say? The crappy song with a really crappy video.
I did listen to the fox, actually.
They can actually sound like seven or eight different animals, depending on what age they are, what breed of fox they are, what mood they're in, and what climate they're in. They can sound completely different. Sometimes they chirp, sometimes they bark, sometimes they yelp, sometimes they squeal. I mean, you know,
it's an ancient mystery.
Okay. I can tell you something that isn't a mystery, Eric. And that is line 296 in our notes. We just had an election in the United States. And some people said, well, if this person gets elected, we're going to go to war with Russia. Well, if this person gets elected, we're going to go to war with Korea. Okay. Whoever, whenever, whatever might happen in the realm of war with other countries, we now have an unsuspecting entry into the game of war and war type devices. There's a new Ukraine rocket launcher that, if you look really close at the picture, there's a Raspberry Pi inside.
Yeah, you can see it plain as day. They're not using the headphone jack or the video out composite port.
Yeah. Now I'm gonna put it like this, and this is not me being politically correct. This is me being honest to myself. This is exactly like E equals MC squared back in the day when they discovered that energy equals mass times the square root of the speed of light times square the speed of light. It is not good or it is not bad. It is a inanimate thing. It's a fact. It's not good or bad. For people to try to say inventions or things we discover as being good or bad, you're wrong. 100% wrong. Just like the Raspberry Pi. The Raspberry Pi can be a device that can be put in third world or lesser schools to educate children and adults on how computers compute, on how to do web pages, how to program, how to do VoIP communications, how to access data remotely, or it could be central to the navigation of a rocket launcher. It just is. It isn't good or bad.
Is this in the ordinance itself, and it's like that piece is going to have a sensor on it that is heat-seeking, or it has guidance that will control how the fuel's being burnt in the back end of this bullet that's flying out? So that, and it's only cost them $30 a rocket for this guidance system built into the front part of it?
Yeah, I believe it's in the internals of the munition itself. Now, devil's advocate, when you do munitions, you don't want to use high-grade, expensive things inside it. So things like the Raspberry Pi make really good sense for that kind of use. I'm just saying. It is what it is. It's not good. It's not bad. It's just a thing. Now that we know about it, we have a choice. As a people, we cannot buy Raspberry Pis, and we can let the excess Raspberry Pis go to being instruments of war, instruments of chaos, and instruments of death, or we can stimulate the economy, and unfortunately the UK economy, and buy Raspberry Pis and put them to use yourself. It's like going to the pound and buying a dog instead of having it released into the wild and, you know, kill baby deer or something. Did that make any sense, Eric?
No.
Yeah, I don't think it did. But trust
me. That's okay. You're usually really good with analogies. I figured you'd round it up to where I would be, oh, yeah, that's what he's getting at. That's okay. I kind of get what you're saying. They're going to keep making Raspberry Pis.
Yeah.
For good and bad.
Period.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Another article I want to mention really quick. 298. Chip is one of the companies I still feel really, really good about. If you go to getchip.com, that's the actual website for the company. I believe the company is Next Thing. I think it's Next Thing. And one of the things that they literally just started selling is called the Pico 8. Okay, I'm not going to lie. I was really confused at what the hell this thing is. Okay, chip, $9 computer, whole bunch of GPIOs. You have the combination audio, video, analog output. You have full-size USB. You have micro USB, and that's it. Okay, you can flash OSs to it and play with it. The Pico 8 is basically an add-on board, okay, that you can slap on top of it. You also get Super Nintendo-looking controller, and you get the console kit, which is the Pico 8 brick, a power brick, the HDMI dip, so you have HDMI output as well, and it basically gives you the availability to create, make, build games yourself on this Pico. And I'm sure the Pico 8, I think it's a reference maybe to an old game system. I'm not sure. But so you can get this new add-on, basically, board for the chip. And honestly, this is why I like the chip. They're not sitting still. They're not resting on their laurels. They're not just trying to sell the $9 computer. They're trying to sell everything around it and the $9 computer. This is the kind of device I really, really, I wish they would have came out with a month or two earlier, because I could see this being the basic building blocks of a what's called a bar top or a barcade system for my son to be able to make and play custom video games on. I think this could have been really cool.
I like that the chip is also promoting people's projects that they're, you know, giving, not saying, hey, buy this cheap, microcontroller or processor or whatever I've got here for sale. See what these guys did. Like, I love this, a project that they did to upcycle your old speakers.
Right.
So basically you're taking an old set of, maybe good sounding speakers, and by simply taking one of these phone chargers, you're then powering a car amplifier that's screwed to the back of the speaker, and you get the chip. And I would assume that you're using them to play MP3s or Bluetooth or something to them now.
Yeah, you can basically take an old set of classic speakers, and I believe what they're doing is they're turning it into a set of streaming speakers. So from your phone, you can easily pick a song, click the button, and it will stream it to these speakers. Yeah, and to me, it's smart of them to do it. It's good of them to do it. To me, they don't have a choice. They better do it, because the one thing that they cannot compete with is the Raspberry Pi community. So they better support and they better show love, straight up love, to their to all their people, building and buying their stuff, or else, because they will go someplace else if they don't feel loved. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, really quick, the Pico 8. It uses a programming language called Lua, L-U-A, which doesn't mean a lot to a lot of people, but some of the people out there, I just rang their bell, ring-a-ding-ding. Lua is one of those old scripting language that's used a lot for Unix and Linux small applications, including and not limited to, I can't remember what it's called, the Linux, basically live desktop system, where you can see all the little graphs and meters and activities of I/O and network and hard drive stuff. Lua is a very simplistic, near human readable scripting language. So that means, honestly, a kid with a little bit of wherewithal, a kid with a little bit of muster behind his want and desire, will be able to look at the Lua scripting language and probably pick up a lot of things about it and just start to type here.
So for some of us who are my age, we learn BASIC in school or out of school or on our own. Is things like this for like a person who may have a little BASIC background knowledge, made some ASCII characters run across the screen back in the day, Is there anything that translates? It kind of translates all over. It's kind of a little bit how Spanish and English runs together. There's certain words that you just know seem to work together, seem to do the same things. There's certain coding that is kind of universal, I guess, like if-then statements, things like that.
Right. Yeah, a lot of it is, I want to say commonsensical is the word I use for it. But it is a kind of thing. There's no secret mystical, magical symbols that mean thing. It's all it is all word driven, which is a big plus. So like BASIC, you're not going to be able to just start typing and have everything work. But if you look at other examples of it, you should be able to at least type some things out and, you know, do some pretty advanced things. And knowing them, they're going to highlight a lot of these games and put the best on the OS by default and allow you to download it. Because I do believe the Pico 8 was the Pocket Chip engine to create games that's built right onto the Pocket Chip, which my son was having a lot of fun with. So this was a good experience place to where he could make the games. So now there's a good place where he can play the games.
Okay, so there is some news coming out from Chip. So they're saying that the Pico 8 free now. Get it with apt-get. Pico 8 is now free and on every chip. To install it, simply follow the instructions in this blog spot. But then they're starting a Kickstarter tomorrow at 8 a.m.
Oh.
The response to Chip has been amazing, but we've been getting a lot of questions about where what it takes to go from prototype to Chip Pro-powered consumer product. We're planning to share many more details, schematics, and code, but we figured it would be best to have a first-hand example of what it takes and how it's done. So it says it's controlled by your voice. Chip Pro adds support for multiple microphones and amazing hi-fi audio via i25, so it's only natural that our first reference design would make use of both. We're keeping all the details a surprise until tomorrow at 8 a.m.
Huh.
As always, our new voice-powered product will be open-source hardware, so the community can join and start hacking, making, and remixing from day one. Look for an email tomorrow with a link to Kickstarter to get the whole story. We're super excited to see what the Chipster community does with the new hardware. Stay tuned. There's much, much more to come tomorrow.
Did you get this from the blog?
This is from it's in the forum under Pico. Gotcha. 8 is free. Or it's under the NTC updates.
Gotcha.
It says Pico 8 is now free for Chip.
Gotcha. That's cool. Honestly, Remix just did a another Kickstarter, Remix.io. I'm not giving them money for that thing. I'm pretty sure that thing's going to let a lot of people down. With that said, I love Remix. I wish them nothing but luck. But anyone who does the quote-unquote mannequin challenge instantaneously loses a crap ton of cred is with me. It's all I'm saying. Because there's no such thing as a mannequin challenge, okay? It's what Police Squad did back in 1978, the end of every show.
Yeah.
God.
I love Police Squad.
Just put on bell bottoms and have Jerry curl juice in your hair while you're at it. I mean, go ahead. Just claim it as your own and say it's new. Why not? So I will look at this tomorrow, and honestly, I might support them on this. I will say, if you go to getchip.com and then click on blog, this is one of the things I really like, Eric. Turn your Pringles can into an Amazon Echo with Chip.
Hmm. Pringles Alexa.
I know. I'm sorry. I think that's kind of cool. Where on the top, they have a button. So basically, you know how the top of a Pringles can, the tube of chips, is like spongy. Like you can actually so that's where the button is. You basically push the button because it's the developer mode of Amazon. So you can't voice activate. So you push the button, and then there's the microphone, the LED, like the battery, the chip, and the speaker all inside. And you can basically make your own Amazon Alexa. I like how they're highlighting these kind of things too. That's all I got to say.
And that would be, it would be like the Amazon Tap, I guess, is the one you have to press the button, so it's not always listening. And good luck on the project. I never did get the Alexa working on my Raspberry Pi when I tried. It's not super simple, but I'm not super smart, so either.
Well, I remember on the Raspberry Pi software version was a big problem on that, because you had to get the exact right version of the software to have everything work exactly as it should have, quote unquote.
Yeah, and there was weird things for me too, because I already had like a developer account that I shouldn't have had before, and I needed a new one. It was the whole getting into my Amazon dev account really screwed it up.
Gotcha, gotcha. I see you put a link in here too, Eric.
Yeah. HP just announced a mini PC, and more than a mini PC, I guess it's this is a workstation that's very small. Basically, it looks like it's about the size of your set-top Android TV boxes.
Oh, wow.
So basically, you're going to be mounting this to the back of a monitor, but it's a full workstation made for AutoCAD designers and other compute-intensive industries.
Wow.
It can have Xeon processors in it. It can have i5, i7 processor in it also. I think maybe even an i3 it would start out with. The starting price is $699.
Yeah, that's what I saw. Mm.
But that is, I'm sure that's an i3 or i5. But it doesn't, I don't know if it had full specs on it. They say that they've really worked hard to keep it quiet, so you know it definitely is going to have some fans in it. It's got high-end video graphics.
Well, yeah, to do the AutoCAD, here's the gimmick. To do the AutoCAD, you don't necessarily need high-end graphics. You do need solid graphics. You do need not chintzy graphics. You do need a quality graphics card. So it's not like this is going to be, you know, some half-baked video stuff going in here. This is going to be the real deal. I mean, you're not going to be playing insert high-end Windows game in here. You're not going to be playing that, but it's going to have to be able to do a lot of compositing and stuff on the fly with that CAD, because CAD's not light.
It does have the VESA holes already built into the chassis of it, so it'll screw right into the back of any monitor.
I love that.
They say 2.3 inches high, 90% smaller than a traditional business size, business class tower. It's got support for six displays right out of the box. So,
yeah.
And they show a nice picture of what your desktop looks like with six displays running off of it. That's always nice.
Well, because everybody wants six displays. I mean, I know I do. It's a little bit chunkier than I thought it was, I'll say, but it's not at all big. It's not at all even close to big. I like how the corners are basically what it looks like, vents for the system. Mm-hmm.
Windows 10 or Linux, right out of the box. You get your choice.
It says that? Or you say that?
It says that.
Oh, that's good.
It says shorter than a cup of espresso, the workstation running Windows 10 Pro or Linux comes equipped with the next generation Intel Xeon processors, NVIDIA professional graphics, and the ability
of
HP Z Turbo Drive for handling large files remarkably fast.
I mean, I'm not a processor aficionado, but I'm pretty sure Xeon is the good ones.
Yeah. Xeon's not going to be your $699 one.
Yeah. No.
That's going to be the i5, I'm sure.
Wow. Yeah.
I'm trying to get the HP store to come up, but it doesn't seem to be opening for me to spec it. Oh, there we go. Now it is.
Just a little slow.
It says it's actually designed for CAD users.
Right.
So it must be optimized, you know, for AutoCAD and things like that. AutoCAD, Inventor, Revit, Vectorworks, SolidWorks, MicroStation, SolidEdge. I've listened to my wife. She's a designer, and she's used a couple three of those different programs. I know that.
Very cool. Yeah, this to me looks like it really can be one of those things where if you see this on somebody's desk, you know,
they're doing some work.
They're doing some work, and they're like one of the boss, like, favorite people, because this thing is going to be pretty powerful.
I don't know what HP Z Turbo Drive is. It says reduce boot up response times and file uploads with up to 1.5 terabytes of storage.
Right. Well, I mean, it's turbo, so it has to be good, right?
Well, yeah. I wonder if it's got the button that
needs to
turn that off if you need to.
And then it, like, you know, can like make that little sound. Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, those vents, it looks like two of the vents are for cool air and hot air goes out the other two vents in the corners.
Gotcha. Here's one that Joe Heck posted, Eric, and it is line 298 in the notes. MSI. I don't know how you feel about MSI.
I love MSI.
Yeah. I've always been an ASUS hardware fan. And
I love ASUS also.
And whenever I ran across MSI hardware, it was always better to me than the average hardware. Mm-hmm. I always thought really nice hardware. Okay. MSI launches a powerful, small, form factor PC for VR gaming. My lord, that is a mouthful, man. Okay, VR is a fad. VR is not going to be anything until it's near weightless kind of thing, and it's everywhere, ubiquitous. Until then, it's going to be like curved television or 3D television. It's, you know, look what I have. Oh, it's cool. And that's about it. But this constant innovation is what I'm always interested with, and to have MSI jump in the game, it to me is another stamp of credibility in this thing is moving forward, this thing is getting better, this thing is becoming more standard to where more people are going to have it. The thing that shocked me about this, Eric, have you ever looked at like MSI laptops?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're like Alienware, the big bulky super gaming machines.
Yeah, some of them are like $4,000. They ain't cheap. So as soon as I saw this, I literally responded to Joe Heck and said, I'm afraid to look at the price of this thing, man. This thing's
Trident.
Yeah. MSI, not cheap. VR gaming, come on now. VR gaming, you might as well say diamond encrusted. You might as well say, you know, top sirloin, Farquhar, you know. That just means money, right? I'm thinking this is going to be at minimum $800 to $1,500 just for the base model. That's with, you know, you don't even get like a power plug kind of thing. It's going to be so cheap. But then I'm looking at this thing and I'm really shocked. The base Trident comes with an i5, or you can get an i7 processor. That's decent. It comes with a mini ITX variant of the GeForce GTX 1060 in either 3 gig or 6 gig configurations.
Those both sound fine by me.
Oh, compared
to anything I've used.
That sounds very good to me. Now, but here's the thing. What blows me away is if you scroll down to like the fourth paragraph, it says the Trident will be available this month starting at $899 as a pre-configured system or $599 as a bare-bone kit. That is uncommonly cheap for MSI-grade hardware. That's all I'm going to say. To which tells me is they're trying hard to become relevant in this space quick. Like, hey, look at us. Keep looking at us. Keep looking at us. I will say they even mentioned the Zotac one that I do believe that we brought up on this show maybe 2 months ago. The Zotac one is smaller, they say, a little bit more compact with the GTX 1060.
Yeah, that's the Zotac Magnus EN 1060.
Yeah, and I remember that thing wasn't cheap. $999. Yeah, let's just close that tab.
That's with no memory or storage.
Yeah. So I really like the idea of these powerhouse, really legitimately powerhouse computers coming in a small form factor, and I'm okay with riding the coattails of the VR popularity in order to make this hardware more ubiquitous, more people making the hardware, and hopefully have the price comes down.
You know, you were talking down about VR as you usually do. I'm thinking, you know, the killer app for VR,
porn,
hover rounds, where you don't have to worry about the weight. You can have like a very capable computer strapped to the back of your like wheelchair assist device. You're sitting on it. You're not going to hurt yourself because you're not standing up. If you run into something, you're just going to hit it with your like foot pegs or bumpers. That's what it is, man. It's going to be just like in that show with the robot, WALL-E.
Oh, that's when VR show with that robot.
And that's when VR will really be good, when you're just sitting in that thing, and then you just use the joystick on there to spin right and left, and yeah.
I don't know. I'll say this. The only time I saw VR to where I liked it is also a way I wouldn't use it or play with it. It was the idea of doing first person view combat type games, but the treadmill was a circle treadmill with a ring around your waist, to where you could basically turn in any direction and run, but you were really stationary kind of thing. That, to me, I thought was cool because that got people off their butts and made them physically run.
Yeah, those people, and anybody who physically runs is never going to wear the VR headset.
Well, it's going to be covered in sweat. It's going to be all sticky and stuff. But, okay, I can't remember who it was. I'm really upset. I'm really, 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 really upset. I can't remember who it was. It might have been somebody from Lynx Gamecast, but I'm not sure. These things are going to be as popular as right now, custom steering wheels are for racing games. That's where VR is going to be. AKA, when you go over to somebody's house and they have it, you're going to look at them, I know, you're one of those guys. You're a little weird.
But they're fun to use.
They are, but they're big, bulky. Yeah. They cost too much. Only certain games support them. And, you know, you're going to have your only small ring of friends that are going to be able to do it.
And they're too much work to get out and use anyway. I mean, I've got one. I loved his force feedback and all that, but
right.
That's too much work.
To me, the steering wheel thing makes more sense. Because the VR thing, the problem always becomes, how are you moving around? Because if you're just sitting in a chair, then you've got to have it on your chair, or you're going to get tangled up somehow, or you're going to spend money having a thing hanging from the ceiling, or you're going to have to spend money cleaning out a room. Okay, granted, this is America. We have bigger houses than I think a lot of people. We have bigger rooms than I think a lot of people in the world. But you want to literally empty out a room and just dedicate it to gaming? And I know the for some reason, journalists call it Viv. It's Vive. They call it Viv because they're idiot journalists, because the company even calls it Vive. They have things where you put things around the corner of your house, corner of your room, so the game will like warn you not to go any further. That ain't going to work. That ain't going to take off. Game developers are not going to program for that kind of thing. It's all confusing. It's all a melee. It's all just people throwing stuff against the wall. Some of it's cool. You know what the number one VR app is still, right, Eric? What everyone says is the killer app.
It should be the Queen Bohemian Rhapsody song.
No, it's YouTube VR. Saying YouTube VR is the killer app is maybe one of the most pathetic things I've ever heard in my life.
It doesn't install on my phone.
Well, it doesn't matter. It's not an app. It's a gateway to YouTube videos. That's your killer app? We already have that. It's on a desktop. It's called a browser.
Well, browser's not strapped to your face.
I know, but still, a huge percentage of the videos aren't VR ready. So it's literally like your isolationist, segregationist, setting yourself aside into a virtual theater.
Now that VR YouTube is only going to show you VR content. The VR content that's there.
No.
It's not going to just be like a big cinema screen where you can pick up. It's just a big cinema screen, virtual cinema screen where you pick up videos off a big, huge fake wall.
If it's not a VR video. It's stupid.
They've had that. That's been around for a while.
I know.
A few different apps.
I know. And that's why I say a killer app. I had this back when I first loaded Cardboard.
Yeah, right.
I know. Just more proof to me yet again, journalists are completely out of touch. Just like journalists said, you know, this election coming up looks like Hillary's going to win in a landslide. You know, just another example of how journalists have no idea about anything going on. And for anybody out there who is a journalist and listening to this, prove me wrong. Prove me wrong. I'll give you money. Prove me wrong.
And if you don't want to prove us wrong and you just want to spew hate, fine. Just email Steve at
smdcomputers.
Steve at smdcomputers.net.
Right.
You take it.
I want to take a tangent here, Eric. 3D printers.
Yes.
Thoughts?
Which one did you buy?
None. Not yet. Not yet. Okay, because here's the whole thing, Eric. Our friend, cousin friend, Richard Hughes, did buy the $188 3D printer about a week ago.
Oh.
It hasn't even shipped yet. He's a little mad. But I'll say you get what you pay for. You know, go on now. I have an area. Next Monday, I have off of work, blood test, doctor's appointment. That next Monday, I'm going to take a lot of stuff to the dump. Boom. I have the physical area ready for it.
For your VR headset room?
Yeah, right. For my 3D printer. I will say that. Here's the gimmick. 3D printer, VR. VR, 3D printer. They're both niche things. They're neither one are going to be around in their current
form
in 3 to 5 years. That I admit. But I'm going to get spend about, I think it was $80 to build a box to put the 3D printer in, because consistent temperature for the printer makes more consistent prints. That's all you got to know. The real reason I'm putting it in a box is when you put it in a box and you hit print, you can't hear the damn thing.
Yeah, that's true. And it probably keeps dust off of the sensors and the laser eyes and things.
Right, and it keeps hue humidity and stuff more stable, I'll say. Because if I'm doing podcasts, I can't have the damn thing sitting there making noise. So hey, probably in 2 or 3 weeks, I'm going to buy one.
Can you make me a keychain that looks like our Podnuts logo?
I don't know if I can do anything, Eric. Okay? Seriously.
When you can you send me one of those? I think that'd be pretty cool. Well, I want one of the first 10 of your key rings.
Well, first and foremost, there's a whole bunch of terminology that the people who are into this take for granted everyone else already knows. The first thing I was told I got to do is I got to get a coin designed. And a coin is basically a way you can do quote-unquote test prints. It will test the filament, it will test the temperature, it will test the bed, it will test everything to make sure it's going out right. And the coin is basically just a three-dimensional object, of course, typically round, more round than not, with like the Podnuts logo itself can be that, and it can be raised, and you have different levels and different textures on it to test your printing. And then with them, they're my test prints, but also I can give them away as things at conferences. There's no reason why I can't make stuff like keychains. I'll say that. The couple friends who already have 3D printers said they would be all on board about doing a printing on demand service, a POD printing on demand service for Podnuts. So it'd be like Podnuts printing on demand thing. Where basically people can just email us templates or Thingiverse things saying, "Hey, dude, I want this. This is really awesome." Fine, we can do it. It's going to cost $2 for us to ship it to you. Give me $2. I mean, and yeah, we'll
hey,
just
you
ship
might,
it.
But it would be so weird if you actually had a taker who needed filament-based plastic nuts printed out.
Sure.
For some sort of agricultural application.
I don't know, but and that's the whole thing. I really don't know how much the thing's going to get used. Just like if you get a real 3D VR headset, Eric, you don't know how much you're going to use it.
Right.
It might sit there for 3 weeks on end, not getting used. The same thing might happen with that 3D printer, for all I know. My only saving grace is I really hope I can get at least one of my kids, my oldest son, interested in it and have him on his computer have the good, quote-unquote, modeling software on it, so maybe he might want to, design stuff. I don't know. I can try.
Yeah, when I learned AutoCAD, I used to draw cars on it in 3D. If I could have printed them out back in the day when I was a high schooler, I might have done a whole different way with my life.
Honestly, same here. But
I was just super psyched that I could hide my initials in like the lug nut.
Okay, now there's an insulting thing that I said to you about what is the thing with VR, and I said porn. Well, I'm going to also say this. Supposedly, there are multi-level marketing things going on right now, like in California, where people have these parties at their house and they print custom three-dimensional personal intimate entertainment devices.
PIDs. Personal intimate devices.
Sure, yeah. So if people can say that's the only thing a 3D printer, I don't know. I'm just
saying. So are they using a 3D camera to create them?
You're asking me like I have intimate knowledge of this, Eric. I don't.
A 3D scanner?
I don't know. I just know it happens. Just like I know there's multi-level marketing, I think it's rampant in this country.
I thought it had gone away. I hadn't heard of like multi-level marketing for a long time until an alderman in the city, who's not an alderman anymore, approached me about an Android app. Huh. That he wanted me to buy into, and there was a big meeting about it at the junior high school, and they had quite a huge crowd. They filled like the stadium, and they wanted all these investors for this big app, this Android app, Android iOS, Windows Phone app. It's all going to launch at the same time. It's some betting app, and if you got in early and got a bunch of people underneath you, you'd be making money every time somebody placed a bet, no matter . I don't want to know anything about it, dude. If you think I can make money and I'll give you $30, you really think I'm going to make money, I'll do that. I don't want to go to any training and I'm not going to sell to anybody else. You can do with my $30 whatever you think is right. I never did, though, and I don't think the app's ever come out, and I know they had a big meeting in Vegas, and I told him he wanted me to bring him on the Android App Addict show to talk about it, and I'm like, well, why don't you give me an app, give me a link to it in the Play Store so we can look at it first, and that I don't believe has ever happened. I think a lot of people's money just got took on that one. It was kind of like when I was in high school, somebody took a semi-trailer and set it out by the interstate and set an old NASCAR on top of it and put this huge banner along this on the side of the the semi-truck trailer that said "Welcome Race Fans." And he convinced a lot of people that he was going to build a NASCAR track out there. But he needed investors. And they had these strange little groups, and they had these big meetings, and everybody pitched in $2,000 to get the NASCAR track built, and he took off with all their money. Nobody got a thing out of it, and the NASCAR track is nowhere near here.
Wow.
I'm weary of things like that.
Well, no, the word is skeptical, Eric. And it's, trust me, it's good to be like that. I mean, you know, at least the stories about back in the day and the snake oil salesman going through town, this tonic will grow your hair, make you lose weight, and make you more manly than ever. Just $2. You know, the same mentality lives today. It's just morphed into more elaborate lies, is what I'm going to say. And it goes all the way down to supplements. You know,
I've got a tin of beard balm.
Beard balm. Well, beard balm ain't a hoax.
No, it's for real. You take a 22 size chunk of it and you rub it in your hand, throw it in your beard.
Yeah, they have beard wax and then they have beard oil too. I've
butter
seen that
too. Beard butter.
Yeah. No. I'll pass on that.
It's Grovember, man. You're not even growing yours, so I don't know if you can talk right now about it.
Just like if you were to ask me to do the mannequin challenge, Eric, you would be bruised. If you ever again ask me to take part in Movember or whatever, I'm going to spike one of your drinks with X-Lax.
Ooh, that's now. Okay. I want to do that. Hey, my daughter did the sardines challenge the other night. It wasn't, there's no such thing as the sardines challenge, by the way, but one of her friends happens to like eating sardines out of a tin can.
Oof.
Brought them over to the house and kind of videotaped my daughter trying it for the first time.
Ooh, they're crunchy too. No.
She said that, yeah, that was the first thing, that was her main comment about them.
It's their little crunchy. It's their little bones.
Yeah, I didn't want to tell her that. She probably figured it out, but
yeah, no.
I had no idea that they were crunchy.
I remember my brother one time ate a can in front of me, and I couldn't help it. I had to beat the crap out of him right there.
Did you try one?
No.
Okay, I to this day have not tried a sardine either.
I'm not going to.
What? How about canned oysters? Have you tried those?
I don't like oysters
in the can.
I don't eat food that resembles mucus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. I never thought I'd eat them. I tried them. If you take a Ritz cracker and just yellow mustard, and then stick one of them smoked oysters on top of that and eat it, it's really actually good. I have another item in the spreadsheet.
Oh, okay.
It's not really a super mini computer. It's basically this cheap little tablet that's coming out in competition with the Amazon Fire tablets. And Barnes & Noble is actually coming back out with another Nook. This is a 7-inch tablet that they're going to be selling for $50. There's not a whole lot of details on it yet. It looks like it's a fairly decent-looking piece of hardware. Not a huge bezel around the outer edge of it. But it doesn't really tell you how much, you know, I mean, the Fire 8 has a gig and a half of memory in it, which I think is just a little bit inadequate, but it's only like $89. This one for $50, if it's got a gig and a half of memory in it or 2 gigs, would be really much better.
Right.
But
well,
then I think it could be big, but I don't know if they can do that for $50.
Well, yeah, I'll say this. This has been,
Sorry. This
has been rumored with for at least the last 2 or 3 months where they're going to make the Nook tablet, but make it less Nookified and give you more Google Play. And you can see right there, the icon right on the top, you can see the Google search, Chrome, and the Google Play Store. Competition is good. I'm going to tell you right now, competition is real good. The Amazon $50 tablet right now is by far, extremely, by far, the best bang for your buck. For as little as $50, you get an actual okay performing device with a battery that lasts much, much, much longer than a $50 tablet from 1, 2, 3 years ago, whatever. So, And but there are some people out there that are really vexed against, I don't want to be in the Amazon ecosystem. I don't right. want it to be a device that enables me to buy stuff easier from Amazon. So that right there is a big opening. And no one has ever stepped in to try to, you know, entertain that purchasing crowd out there. This has an opportunity, Eric, to be huge.
Right, because that's huge. The thing that keeps the Amazon tablet so cheap is because people can buy off of it mm-hmm. from themselves. Same with the Barnes & Noble Nook. They will be able to buy audio and books off of that. That can help subsidize the tablet. It can. On all, like Samsung's not going to be selling anything on their tablet. That's why they're not selling it for $50, and neither is Toshiba or iView or whatever. Now, and then if you read, this is a little Putin ad that article that we're referring to. They also said, but by the way, Black Friday sales, it will be 3333, which is the episode number, is 33. It'll be 3333 at Amazon, Staples, Target, and Best Buy around Black Friday. So that tablet you said is the best bang for the buck at $50 is going to be $33.33.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good deal. It really is a good deal.
And see, now my wife's been, she was using my Nexus 7. You know, I think I talked about it last time. I tried to fix the Nexus 7 charging port. I thought I had it. It's not charging. So now it's either the battery or that port's totally bad. I just basically straightened it out so that the cord would fit in there. So I ordered a wireless charger for it because it's got the built-in wireless. The Nexus 7 2013 has wireless built into it already. So I'm going to try the wireless charging. If that doesn't work for this thing, then it must be the battery's bad. And then I'll replace the battery. But I don't know if the Amazon $50 tablet could be a replacement for what she's used to on a 2013 Nexus 7. What do you think, Dor? If I was to do it, I would get the $89 Amazon 8-inch with a gig and a half of memory. That would be my only choice, I think, really.
I'll say this. What is she doing on the device? I mean,
no, she's just Pinterest and Facebook. Just, you know, yeah. She's not gaming or any, you know, I mean, she might do some games, but nothing.
Yeah, then it will do everything that she wants to do. And I'll say this, the price difference to me is not fair because I've played with both of those devices side by side. I can't tell the difference in how they're running.
You know, with the new 8-inch one?
Yeah, speed difference. I don't see really a difference.
They both run like videos, play video back smoothly, though.
Yeah, I mean, that's all my son does on his.
That's the main thing.
That's literally, virtually all he does is video watching.
You can Chromecast from them or not?
You can easily sideload Google Play Services Framework and then load Google Play and then have all Google available to you. On the Amazon ones. Oh. Now, I haven't heard anyone say that any kind of updates came down and broke it ever. So I feel really confident in saying you can just load the framework, load Google Play, and then just load Chromecast apps if you want or anything else on it, just fine. I'll take another look at that 8-inch one because the one I think the one I saw is the one that's out now, but I'll double check. Because I'll say the $50 one to me is just remarkable what you get for the $50. You know, it is 7-inch. If she requires something a little bit bigger, then, you know.
Yeah, she's used to the Nexus 7, so that's... But yeah, the new one has, like, Dolby Sound, more memory, faster processor.
Yeah, that's one thing that my son does have a problem with on the Amazon Kindle Fire 7-inch, is he loads apps on it incessantly. So at least once a week, he'll say, Dad, I can't do this. Which is one of the weird things that tablet does is if there's not enough room on the storage card, it won't let you connect to Wi-Fi.
That is odd. Yeah, yes. That 8-inch has 16 or 32 gigs of memory and SD card up to 200 gigs.
Yeah, I don't think there's any SD card on his. And honestly, I think his might only has 8 gigs of internal space.
Okay. Yeah, I think you're right.
Yes, this could be it. This could be a really good... find that's either Barnes and Noble one or an 8-inch one.
I don't want to really pull the trigger yet. I'd like to see the specs on this one. Hopefully it's comparable. If it's not comparable to the Amazon one, it was a nice try. They probably shouldn't have even tried again.
Right. Well, it says 8 gigs of internal storage. Does have a micro SD card slot up to 128 gig. Hmm. Depends on how they do the card, though. Not all Android uses SD cards correctly.
Yeah, the Dells don't.
Yeah, and the most lacking feature, I'm going to say, is a feature I don't care about. 1024 by 600 resolution, which means they can put a lesser battery in it and get longer battery life out of it. So I'm sure that's why that compromise was made. So there's, because they're saying up to 7 hours battery life in this Nook tablet.
And it can probably display, you know, video smoother than if it had more pixels to fire up.
True, true.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's getting to be Christmas time. These things are going to get cheap, and there's going to be all kinds of them coming out in the next month. Maybe not a mini PC, like maybe it doesn't belong in this show, but I just, I had Door-to-Door Geek in front of me, and I wanted to ask.
It's
Shame
cool.
on me, man. Send us, if you want to ask him something, send us an email, and we will read it on the air. Send us a voicemail, we'll play it on the air, and we'll actually give you an answer to the questions you ask, too. Door, is there anything else you want to talk to the listeners about tonight before we...
The only thing I want to remind people, quote-unquote, is once in a while, go to podnuts.com as a personal favor to myself and just look at the show list. Right now, all the shows we have available to us on the network are Android App Addicts, Book Nuts, Podnuts Computer Repair Podcast, Geeksters, Linux for the Rest of Us, Mini PC Show, MRP Tech Podcast, Podnuts Pro, My Hard Drive Died, Podnuts Daily, and Sports Nut. Podnuts Pro used to be on, hasn't been on for 3 years. That show just came back with Marvin B., Martin Obando, and Matthew...
Radella.
Matt Rainey. Not Radella.
Rainey.
Matt Rainey. Three of the smartest techs, small office, home office, enterprise techs I think I've ever heard in my life speak. That's a really good show. MRP Tech Podcast is a podcast that just came onto the network. Really nice guy. Again, another Matt. Apparently, I like people with first names.
I haven't listened to that one, and I haven't listened to the new Podnuts Pro either.
Right. Well,
what am I doing?
I don't know, but MRP just came on the network maybe a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago. I highly encourage people, go to the site every now and then, look at the shows, try out the new shows, see if you like them. If you do like them, email the shows, let the host know you're listening and what you think about the show. And if not, send an email to any of the podcasts you listen to, letting them know how they're doing, what you think of how they're doing, and basically encouraging them to keep it up. Real podcasters, not tech journalists, not actors from Hollywood, not people who are doing this trying to make millions off of it, but real people who are doing podcasts do not get enough feedback from people. Feedback is energy. Feedback is power. Feedback helps podcasters keep things going. So email your friendly neighborhood podcaster this month and just let them know how you feel like they're doing.
And these, remember, these podcasters, I've been part of Podnuts for years. I used to be a host of Podnuts itself when I owned a computer repair shop. We are just here to share with people. I mean, if you listen to Podnuts, I still listen to Podnuts. Sharing how to run a computer business, sharing how to handle customers, sharing trials and tribulations and the things that happen day to day in a computer business. Now, what was that MRP podcast? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What's that about?
MRP Tech Podcast is basically Matt, who's basically, he's an extreme tech enthusiast. He is a educator and a musician who will take an episode and tell you about all the recent things that happened at a Windows, the announcement about their new hardware, their new software, all the things he sees about it that he likes, that he doesn't like, inventive things, you know, new things, whatever. Next show, he'll talk about the new Macs that come out and all the different things coming out with them and all the good and all the bad and all the difference and all the new and all the unique and all the cool and all the different. And then the next one, he'll go into Ubuntu Studio and tell you about that. And he basically just discovers tech, digs really deep into it, and then comes on a show and talks about it. And it could be any kind of tech from week to week.
tech news without a bunch of thumb ring wearing journalists.
No journalists here. But not just reviews, but basically,
tech news though. Tech news.
Not only news, but okay. Reviews and insight. That's the one thing that I think his show offers that a lot of other shows don't offer, is that from the trenches insight on the technology and not just, you know, things to get clicks.
See, I'm not going to speed mine up to 2.8 to catch up with all these new Podnuts podcasts. So basically, I'm stuck at 1.5-ish. That just means I need to walk to work more often, because that if I walk to work, it takes a half an hour to an hour. If I drive to work, it takes 5 minutes, and I don't get nothing listened to.
Gotcha.
So this will be my inspiration. This week I walked to work a couple times, and I started like revisiting some old podcasts and trying to find some new ones. And I didn't care for any of them, and I don't even know why I didn't look at home for what door's been going on behind the scenes, man. If you guys haven't checked out these podcasts, check them out and give them some love, man. Let them know if you like it or not. And hey, speaking of giving love, give Dore and the shows some other love, especially this holiday time. You're going to be buying off Amazon anyway. Just do the network a favor, and it doesn't make any difference on your end. You're still going to get the same 1 or 2 day shipping. You're still going to get the same discounts and prices. Just go to podnuts.com/Amazon. Save it in your browser and do all your holiday shopping through that, and a little bit of we'll go back to the network, and it's effortless way to help out the station. If that's, I think that's all we got tonight, Dore. Episode 33 is done. I'm surprised we didn't have a cake or something for it. And we'll see you all next week for episode 34, which is not quite as quiet.